Welcome to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group, makers of firearms finishes so tough you need dynamite to take them off. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always check out past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me, Matt the Minion. Mr. Minion, how are you?
I'm Minion-rific.
Minion-rific?
Minion-rific?
Mintastic? Yeah, it's early.
Something like that. It is.
Yeah, this is... right now we're actually on an airplane flying to Las Vegas for SHOT Show 2015, but through the magic of radio and the kindness and goodness of Joe Strecker's heart for coming in to record a show with us, we're going to have new episodes for you. So just a quick reminder, this segment brought to you by Cold Cult. The legend continues. Apparently my laptop died in my car, and I've still not got the correct charger for it, so it's like slowly trickle charging right now, and I'm doing all of this just off the top of my head. And usually I have a little script to read, which helps me out, but so far so good. Anyway, we're going to have a great show with Jeff Gonzalez from Trident Concepts. We're actually going to get him, we'll get him on air right now. So joining us, Mr. Jeff Gonzalez. I'm pressing buttons I don't need to press because Joe's got the board. Thanks, Joe. Jeff, are you there?
I sure am.
Perfect. I didn't even hang up on you or anything. I start mashing buttons like old school video game.
I was wondering about that.
We're not in the same studio that we're usually in. It's before 7 p.m., which is usually when I like to start my workday. So there's just all sorts of things going on right now. Anyway, thanks for coming on the show, man. Just real quick, for those that don't know, can you go over your background and then we'll jump right
in? Sure. So as you've stated, my name is Jeff Gonzalez. I'm president of Trident Concepts. My background comes from Naval Special Warfare. You know, I spent the better half of my adult life working in that capacity on the East and the West Coast, both as an operator and as an instructor. I moved on to a new field, if you will, about 11 years ago. It'll be 12 years this March. And we started Trident Concepts, which, you know, focuses on weapons and tactics. And it's been a glorious ride. I'm very excited with the progress that we made, the support that we've gotten from the community, and of course, you know, trying to improve upon everybody's safety has been you know, priority number one for us.
Right. And when you say operator, we're not talking like AT&T long distance operator. We're talking like the actual legal term operator that has been perverted and thrown around so frequently these days, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I forget about that sometimes. It's you know, it's funny. I hate to say it because you're absolutely right. I cannot stand to see that word thrown around.
And it's
very frustrating. I've had some heated discussions with some other trainers that use that term to describe some of their students, and I'm like, yeah, no, that's not how that works.
No.
I'm sorry.
No,
you can't go to a training class and be labeled an operator. That's not how it works.
No. Well, it's since words are important, and I've been having this argument online with defining words, you've probably hopefully missed some of the stupid things that I've been doing lately. But, yeah, I just thought I would point out, since I had you on and you mentioned it, and I thought of it right then, a very, very specific thing is meant when operator is used, and it's not really what everyone thinks it means. But anyway, that's a completely different show. So you do – as you said, you're president of Trident Concepts. You do a lot of training. You also write a lot of articles. I know there's been a couple lately that we could probably talk about. You also do product development and some consulting with some companies. You've got a new rifle coming out, which we can talk about that as well. Where do you want to start?
Oh God, that's a good question. Well, since you ended with the rifle, we should probably go ahead and begin with the rifle.
Okay. So why don't you tell us about that, and then we'll let everyone know what I'm doing with it, I guess.
You got it. So one of the things, as you mentioned, that I've been very fortunate enough to participate in is that the various manufacturers in the industry recognize the, you know, the experience and the subject matter expertise that come with, you know, what I like to call high mileage wear and tear. And so we started working with LWRC, which is a piston manufacturer. They manufacture piston rifles. Several years ago, we actually came into contact with them through an incident that occurred with one of their rifles on the range. And through dialogue with them and watching the after action that they took to remedy the problem, it was really good to see that as a manufacturer. I still see very highly of them because it's rare to see a company go above and beyond. It wasn't their fault. Their product performed flawlessly. It was other products that were involved that caused the problem. But they still stood up. They took the stand and made it right, which I thought was very commendable. So we started working with their rifles early. This was at a time when some of the rifle manufacturers just weren't up to snuff and we were having problems in our classes.
Right.
As we started to work with their rifles, we kind of discovered that there was something to it. You know, at the time, there was only, I think, two other piston manufacturers, you know, HK and POF.
Right.
And they were making a rifle that was so incredibly light compared to those that, you had all the benefits of the piston that, you know, and there's not as many benefits as people think between a piston and a DI gun, but there's enough to where you want to take a look at it if it meets your mission requirement.
Right.
And we did. And we created a very good relationship with them that has been longstanding. We've worked with them to help develop the rifle. Many of the current rifles that you see have kind of like our DNA on them as we've worked with. You can see the progression of our we've done three rifles with them, three different generations, and you can see after our rifle comes out how some of the new developments kind of spread around to the rest of the rifles that they have in stock and whatnot. So
right.
This current model is, you know, and I set out, I had like three objectives that I wanted to achieve with the rifle build, and that was, one, we wanted to take a rifle that was uber reliable, like really, you know, we're not talking about a toy, we're talking about a true hardcore tool, and we wanted it to be it was important, obviously, that the number one priority be that it be reliable.
Right.
The second thing was that we wanted it to be as light as we could possibly get it. And we cut weight. You know, I joke about this, how, you know, I still will cut my toothbrush in half just so I cut weight when I'm having to carry all my gear and whatnot. Just,
right.
You know, to try to illustrate the extremes that sometimes we'll go to cut weight. So we did. And the first rifle, the Gen 1 that we came out with, it literally was the lightest rifle out there on the market in the category that, you know, that we were doing. It was lighter than some of the DI guns that we were out there competing against.
Right.
And then the third one, which was the elusive one, was the accuracy.
Yeah.
It is incredibly accurate. You know, all our initial goal was to be as accurate as all the other rifles on the market, you know, with the exception of some of the uber, you know, the high-end guns that you see from like LaRue or Noveski and whatnot. And when we were getting, you know, sub four, competing with everybody else at sub four, that was good. But as we progressed through the gens, I wanted it to get better and better and better and better. And so we really started to tweak it to the point where I can't officially say it's a sub one MOA gun, but it shoots close enough to sub one MOA that, you know, if the gun, the ammo, and the shooter are all in sync, it's going to perform incredibly well.
Right.
So we reached all three of those objectives finally with this new Mark VI.
Okay. And I don't think that we actually told them what it was called, but you just did the Tricon Mark VI. And we've got to go to break here in about 30 seconds, actually. So when we get back, we'll talk about that a little bit more. We'll also, I guess, officially announce, so I have been posting teasers on Instagram and Facebook, what we're going to be doing with that rifle. Anyway, right now we are talking with Jeff Gonzalez from Trident Concepts. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough, you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by Walther. Walther and the new PPX. Walther. So they still haven't gotten me new ad copy. So I assume they're still advertising with me. They haven't told me they're not.
You continue to talk about it.
I do continue to talk about it. Well, you know, I probably would anyway because they do make good guns, whether or not they pay me to say so. I do have this funny thing where I won't actually, you know, say things like that unless they're true, whether or not someone writes me a check.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, this is tangential to the conversation. Right now we're talking with Jeff Gonzalez from Trident Concepts. Before the break, Jeff was just telling us about their new rifle, the Tricon Mark VI, that they've done in conjunction with LWRC. Jeff, are you still there?
I sure am.
Perfect. It's a lot easier when Joe runs the operation here just because I don't have to press any buttons, and I've got this bad habit of, like, just pressing whichever ones I happen to feel like at any given time. They're not always the
nice
correct.
Creating hate and discontent.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, if you haven't seen some of my latest YouTube videos, I'm all sorts of creating hate and discontent. So, anyway, well, maybe we'll talk about that next show. I don't know. We'll see.
Sure.
So anyway, before the break, you were telling us about the Tricon Mark VI, some of the objectives that you were trying to achieve with that. One of the things that seems to be prevalent is with a lot of manufacturers, they will say things about their rifles, and you kind of just have to take their word for it. But LWRC, in no small part, thanks to you, has actually really stepped up here. I have bought one of their Tricon Mark VI rifles, and I'm going to be putting 20,000 rounds through it, similar to the Knights Armament test that I just finished up. How did we come up with that? Was that just sort of I bugged you one day? I can't actually remember. There's been so much going on.
I'm trying to think of it. Yeah, I want to recall it was, I think it was tongue in cheek how you made a comment. I kind of made a comment back, and we had this kind of like banter going back and forth. And then I think at the end, we're like, oh, well, we just need to do this with the Mark VI now.
Yeah.
And then lo and behold, and I want to think too, it was kind of funny because once you got the paperwork, you like turn the paperwork in, and like the next day or something like that, you actually had the rifle waiting for you at the shop.
Yeah, yeah, it was fast. It was like Jimmy John's fast.
Jimmy you know, John's fast.
Well, that's freaky fast delivery, right? But
that's true.
So a lot of the things that seem to be said by people about AR-15s in general are not based off of actual information, and one of the things that I've noticed is there's a data point lacking between, you know, at least publicly available data points lacking between direct impingement rifles and piston rifles. Now, I will say the Tricon Mark VI has got a lot to live up to just because of how the Knights performed, at least my example of one did. You know, we did 20,145 rounds and zero cleaning, zero malfunctions. How do you think the Mark VI is going to do? Any predictions?
Well, when we first started this whole project, I'm glad you bring this up, because when we first started this whole project, we kind of waded into this, you know, and we started off similar to what you did. We bought at the time, I think it was an M6A2, which was like their second gen rifle kind of thing,
right?
And we put it through our paces. We put it through a torture test, where our goal was to fire, you know, and this, you got to put it in context. This is about 4 or 5 years ago. So our goal was to put like 5,000 rounds through it without cleaning.
Yeah.
And I think we achieved that in like one single class. And
yeah,
a single class, just handing it to the various students and having them do the drills. You know, we got damn close to it. And by the end of that class, I'm thinking, all right.
Right.
Let's just move it to 10,000. So we moved it to 10,000 rounds. And that, again, that did not take us long to get to. When we got to 18,000 rounds, they wanted to see it.
Right.
So we sent it back with explicit instructions not to clean it, that you can take it apart and look at it and do whatever you wanted to, but don't clean it. Unfortunately, to look at some of the areas that they wanted to look at for, you know, they wanted to do a really good analysis,
right,
of the wear and tear. Unfortunately, they had to, quote, unquote, wipe it down.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we got it back. It was still dirty, but it wasn't as dirty as when we had given it to them. And so we got it up to about 24,000 rounds. And at that point, it was like I just stopped counting.
Yeah.
I didn't bother to count anymore. So the last estimation that I had put that thing, and it's still in our inventory, put that thing at about 31,000 rounds. And you know, it's still a good rifle in our inventory. We still use it. In fact, I take the upper with me out to California so that I can play by their rules. So I use it, you know, pretty much almost every year. I take it out to at least one class.
Right. Right.
And you know, it as far as my observations during that was the M6A2, which is like four generations ago.
Yeah.
And so much, if you look at that rifle and you look at our current rifle, even though we were experiencing little hiccups here and there, so much innovation and evolution has gone into remedying those things. That when you look at the two rifles side by side, you're like, it looks as though they come from two different rifle manufacturers.
Yeah.
So much improvement has been made. So do I predict that you're going to have similar experience? I do. Based off my experience with these rifles, I mean, I abused the crap out of them. I am horrible. You know, I mean, to be honest, most of the guns that we use in our training classes. So we just beat them to death.
Right.
And I mean, you know, I don't really take much care of them. And I hate to say that because I'm not setting a good example for everybody else to follow, but these are our training guns. These are the blasters that we use in our classes. Obviously the ones that I use for personal defense or duty, we take better care of.
Yeah.
But all of these guns, they are treated, you know, very poorly, yeah. Very poorly.
Well, and that seems to be a common misconception too, is that, and it stems, I guess, from the Vietnam War, which I'd like to point out is, 50 years ago now, since the start of the Vietnam War. There seems to just be a lot of stigma still attached to that weapons platform, whether or not it's a DI or a piston gun that has just been carried into modern times. So, but yeah, anyway, I have put about 300 rounds through the Tricon Mark VI now. I can actually say I'm impressed with the gun simply because it is not set up how I personally would generally set up a rifle, and I didn't expect to like it as much as I already do, especially coming off of a rifle that's configured more to my liking out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very nice surprise. The trigger that you guys put in there is one that you came up – you and I want to say Sean was there for part of the conversation too, came up with. And have in there too what are you guys calling that trigger again?
So that trigger is a collaboration between myself and Bill Geisley over at Geisley Automatics.
Yeah,
and we had just launched the Gen 1 rifle, and we were already talking about what are we going to do with Gen 2. Literally, the Gen 1 rifle was being shipped out to all the distributors, and I'm back at the drawing board working on Gen 2, and I was sitting there talking, and luckily this happened at one of our brainstorming sessions there at SHOT Show. And so we're sitting down in the back room, and I'm talking with the designers and engineers, and we're going over what we want to do. And I was like, listen, one thing that we can do that would bring in an immediate improvement in overall accuracy performance, and I'll caveat it with the precision of the trigger allows you to be more precise with your shots,
right,
was to work on the trigger. And they kind of showed me some of theirs, and I'm like, these are nice. These are an improvement over mil-spec, but this is not what I'm talking about. And so Bill Geisley, who I've used his triggers for years now, his booth was like maybe 50 yards away. So myself and one of the other guys, we just were like, let's just go over and talk to Bill. So we went over. Bill and I stepped out of the booth, and we had a candid conversation. And literally, I like to say this. Because it was funny, because sometimes some of the best things happen in the most obscure places. We're literally outside, standing in the corner, or standing over to the side by the wall, and I'm kind of like illustrating on my hand, like I'm almost like drawing on my hand, like what I wanted to see. And then he goes back, grabs a couple of triggers, and he's like, I'm like, yeah, I'd like to see it, but like this and like that. And he was skeptical at first. He was skeptical. And like within about 3 weeks of getting back from SHOT, we were on the phone again talking, and he's like, okay, I understand what you want. I'll have something for you. And he literally sent me a plastic 3D model about 2 weeks later. And no, I dropped that thing into my rifle. I mean, I wouldn't do live fire, but I was doing plenty of dry fire with it. And I was like, oh my God, this is it. This is perfect. I was like out like first iteration, and he nailed it.
Yeah.
So I call him up, and I was like, dude, it's perfect. This is it.
So on a I was going to say, on a side note, when Joe bleeps out the curse word that you just used, do you want it to be ducks or dogs barking? Do you have a preference?
Dogs barking.
I think Joe can make that happen. So you drop the trigger in, dry fire with it. I have to say I'm impressed, just because, like I said, after coming off of 20,000 rounds through one trigger, it's very difficult to pick up a different anything after that much through one thing and be able to perform with it. You know, and able to do the same thing, maybe even faster than I was doing before. I've posted a couple videos, you know, talking about like aimed splits and the 0.14s, 0.15s at close range. But still,
yeah.
If it's all right with you, Jeff, I'm going to put you back on hold real quick. We got to pay for the show, I guess. When we get back, more with Jeff Gonzalez from Trident Concepts. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms parts and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Barry, Sig Sauer, and many more, as well as premium AR pattern rifles, including Knights Armament. Whether you are looking to protect yourself, are a first-time gun buyer, or a competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for SIG parts and accessories. So, we're talking with Jeff Gonzalez today from Trident Concepts about, we've been discussing their new rifle, the Tricon Mark VI, that they've came out with in conjunction with LWRC, and also, I guess, officially announcing the 20,000-round torture test that I will be conducting on that rifle. I think this one I'm going to mix up just a little bit. I'm going to try and get some more Cheetos Dust and Code Red Mountain Dew on it just to, like, really try and, you know, match the combat conditions that most of the people online want to see, you know.
Well, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Cheetos is one of those, it's so insidious. It just gets everywhere. You know, your fingers, you touch anything, it's draped over everything. I feel like that is going to be the epitome of,
yeah,
of torture.
Yeah. I need to find some NATO spec Cheetos, though. That's the problem.
What you should do is you should get the European version.
Really?
You know, the European versions will definitely do you right.
Okay, perfect. I wish that this was not going out over live radio in the future, because I would have made a really great insidious Cheeto dust joke. But I don't think I can do it on air and get away with it. In fact, Joe's shaking his head at me right now. That probably means I should change the subject. Anyway, so we've talked about your rifle. You wrote an article recently about dry fire that seemed to shake up a lot of people's, I don't know, it seemed to get a lot of undergarments in a twist, to say.
It did. So I was surprised by that.
Well, yeah, I'm oftentimes surprised at the arguments that I've managed to start. So,
true.
And especially how wide-reaching they become, which I guess is just a testament to the power of the listeners of the show. So, but
I agree.
Why don't you? What was the general statement that you were making with your article, and then we'll go from there?
Well, it's like, how can I reference this? It's like the miracle cure. You know, you're sick. You know how your mom would tell you whenever you started to run a fever, there was some home remedy that she would just automatically tell you to go do.
Orange juice.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Go drink. You need to drink more orange juice. You know, anytime you have a conversation with somebody, oh, I got the sniffles. Oh, there's a cure for that. You know, and then you just, whether it worked or had any benefit, didn't matter. That was the remedy for it. And it was agreed upon by society of sorts.
Right.
Dry fire has the same sort of feel to it. Now, people misunderstood. People got so, butt hurt. Can I say butt? Is butt okay?
Yes. Joe is shaking his head that is, in fact, an okay statement to make. So
very good.
Butt hurt is FCC acceptable. So good to know.
Very good. So people got really butt hurt because, so when you have a student, this is one of the problems that we run into. You know, I can almost say we are the only company that does extensive diagnostics with shooters, that we're able to really peel the layers and see what's the root cause for the shooting problems that they're having. And one of the problems that we run into is an aversion. It's an emotional, it's tied into the fight or flight syndrome. And people want to deny it. People want to pretend it's not there. But when you've been doing it long enough and you watch students close enough, you start to pick up and you start to recognize patterns. And that's what we're talking about. It's like sometimes a student will have certain problems that he can drive fire until he's, you know, I mean, until the cows come home. But all he's really doing is, number one, he's reinforcing the bad habit that he should be trying to correct. And number two, he's not really addressing the true problem. He's not addressing what the root cause is. So when we started to talk about that, people got really upset because I know there are, you know, there's various skill sets of instructors that are out there. And some instructors will just tell you when you have a problem, oh, you just need to dry fire more.
Right.
That's their response, dry fire more.
Right.
And I was talking with some of the, you know, and we run in some pretty small circles. And I was talking with one of the instructors who is I've known him now for like probably 15 years, and he's worked his way up to senior, I mean, within a federal agency, the senior kind of like overseer of training. And, you know, him and I were having a very candid conversation about that. And he's like, I can't stand that. My instructors are failing our people because they don't understand what it means to really instruct. And this is one of the indicators is when they have a problem that they can't solve with a student, they just dismiss the student by telling them, go do more dry fire.
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't deal with the problem. They just kind of shuffle them away. They basically have been, it's as if they can't fix the problem. So the only thing that they can do is just tell the student to go ahead and just dry fire more. You'll eventually figure it out.
Right. Right.
And I used an analogy that I thought was very accurate, but some people also didn't like it, which was barbell Olympic lifting.
Yeah.
When you're first starting out with those movements, and some of these movements are incredibly complex, you start usually with like a PVC pipe.
Right.
There's no weight, basically. It's just PVC pipe to help you learn the patterns, the neural pathways that you have to move under load, under tension, if you will.
Yeah.
So dry fire is like that. It's like using an unweighted bar to go through the movement patterns. Okay. Now, without weight, you can still do the incorrect movement patterns. You know, you don't really have a true indicator of whether or not you're doing it right until you load the bar up, and then all of a sudden you find out, oh, shit, I can't do it.
So do you want that one to be ducks or dogs? Or how about cows? I think cows would be acceptable for
cows
that.
Cows mooing would be good. Yeah, that's
okay.
A good one.
All right.
So when you put the weight on, and you try to do those lifts, and you realize that you can't, you know, you scratch your head wondering why. Well, when you were doing it with just an unweighted bar, you weren't moving in the correct pattern. You thought you might have been, but there really wasn't a test. Same thing with dry fire. Right. You know, you can keep doing the same thing over and over and over again incorrectly. My good friend Tony Blauer says it the best. Says, be careful how you practice, because you can get really good at practicing the wrong thing.
Yes.
And then you find out when you go to live fire, wait a minute, I'm still not hitting, or I still have the same problem. I did all this dry fire, and I still have the same problem.
Right.
So that's kind of what that was the gist of the article.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of people got confused, and maybe I'm one of them that got confused, so correct me if I'm wrong. You're not saying that dry fire itself is a bad thing to do. You're saying incorrect dry fire is a bad thing to do, and also dry fire is not a cure-all.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's exactly what I was trying to say.
Well, you should have just said that, Jeff. Jeez.
Well, you know, I couldn't have said it with as much panache. You know, I had to. Yeah. I mean, I have to say, it was probably the most viewed blog that we've done up to this point. It got so many views, and I was really, obviously, I'm happy about that. You know, and it wasn't intended to be a controversial subject. I got sick and tired of hearing people say, "Oh, you just need to dry fire more."
Right.
You know, it's like, no, that's not the solution. You know, unfortunately, here's another analogy. If you want to be a fast runner, what do you have to do?
Run fast.
Exactly. So if you want to be a good shooter, what do you have to do? You're going to have to shoot.
Right.
Like I had somebody, I meant to respond to a couple of these comments. But I had one guy who, of course, he sharpshooted his response. He looked all over the internet to find exactly to support his comment.
Yeah.
And then he posted it in my feed. And I wanted to kind of reply back and say, whatever the guy's name was, you are exactly the person that we were directing this article at.
You should have said that, Jeff. Say what you feel. I've done rather well just saying what I feel. Whether or not it's right, it seems to get a lot of attention. That's the end goal, right? So, wow. Jeff hung up on himself. That's awesome. So, this, yeah, we'll take a break early. We were talking with Jeff Gonzalez from Trident Concepts. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough, you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by Boresight Solutions. Boresight Solutions offers high-end custom modification services for hard-use guns. See why industry, law enforcement, and military professionals have chosen to carry Boresight Solutions firearms. Pat Rogers, Craig Douglas, and Kyle Lamb, just to name a few, have entrusted Boresight Solutions with their personal carry guns. When I'm not busy torture testing project guns, I trust my life to a Boresight Solutions pistol. Quality craftsmanship, improved ergonomics, and amazing attention to detail are what you will receive with every custom Boresight Solutions gun. Boresight Solutions, tools to live by. So, we were talking with Jeff Gonzalez before he hung up on himself, which I guess is like, I don't know. I guess.
Really?
So, yeah. Yeah, really. You hung up on yourself. I didn't do it. I'm not even allowed to touch the buttons in this studio since we're not.
Well, you know, I'm not sure about that. I'm thinking maybe it might have been you since you're button, you know, you have this button fetish. I'm thinking it was probably you.
Yeah, buttons. It's I'm sure there's Japanese businessmen somewhere that also have a button fetish, so I don't feel alone. And speaking of Japanese businessmen, we should bring up Chris Costa just for a second because he was originally.
Oh, God.
Well, okay. Chris is a friend of mine, number one. So I feel able to make fun of him because, you know, like, that's what friends do, right, is sort of make fun of each other. That and the other thing, too, he was originally going to record a show with us today, but then he said something about, like, sleep and needing to, like, pet his beard or I don't know. It needed a spa treatment before SHOT Show or something like that. So as an aside, we will have Chris on to talk about his recent trip to Japan at some point or another. I know all the listeners are just super excited about that. So anyway, sorry, Jeff.
No problem.
Do you want to say something disparaging about the Coast Guard since we're talking about Chris right now? I mean, you know.
What's that?
Do you want to say something disparaging about the Coast Guard since we're talking about Chris right now? You know, and he's a former Coastie.
Is it necessary for me to do that?
No, it's really not. It's kind of like, well, I'm not going to say what it's like because that also would probably be wrong. Anyway, so... And see, the nice thing is that we get to do another show after this, and this will just run, like, one week into the other. So now that we're getting warmed up and this one's getting ready to end, you really want to tune in next week because I'm sure it'll be even better. But anyway, you were talking about the dry fire issue before,
right.
Before you hung up on yourself.
Oh, God.
Hey, you know, if the shoe fits. Why do you think people are so, I guess, number one, tied to ideology? That's close
enough.
That's
correct.
Yeah, something like that. I could spell it, maybe.
Well, you have to be able to use it correctly in a sentence before you can.
You know, I'm probably one of the few radio show hosts, at least in Cincinnati, that has a terrible lisp that I'd, like, overcome each show. And just sometimes I do poorly at it. That and I've been hit in the head a lot, and I'm not that smart, and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, people are tied to their beliefs so strongly that no outside critical thinking occurs. Why is that? Or at least, and I'm not saying everyone, but a lot of people seem to be.
I run into the same problem myself. I think we're all guilty of it. I think to some extent, I'm sure that we all get comfortable, and I think that's what it's about. I would almost use this term very loosely, but I think sometimes people get really lazy. It's easier to keep believing what they're believing rather than to put the effort into researching, learning, developing, discovering new things.
Right.
And, you know, like, for instance, perfect example, next week is SHOT Show.
Yep.
And I think a lot of times – I try to go to SHOT Show. Well, you know, first of all, it's a business trip for me. I have a lot of business that I do, but I do try to get out and see products and new things and stuff like that. So I try to keep an open mind. I try to see, you know, because it's funny that you bring this up because I would, when I was still in the Navy and I had guys going to other schools, and even if they didn't want to go to the school or even if they didn't feel like it was going to be valuable, you know, you just never know where you're going to get that golden nugget of knowledge. And so you're always on the lookout for it. And what I would tell the guys is, hey, you know, it doesn't matter what they're going to tell you to do. You're only there for a short period of time. Do whatever it is that they ask. You never know what you're going to get from it. Challenge yourself to go in there and do, to be as true as possible to the form that you're getting, you're receiving. And so I'd always tell them, hey, walk up to the instructor, introduce yourself to the instructor and tell the instructor that, you know, for the next however many days, hours, whatever the case might be, your sole job is to increase my lethality on the battlefield, and I don't care how you do it.
Right.
You know, if you have me wearing a pink tutu or breathing through my eyelids or whatever, I'm going to do it. And then afterwards, you know, we would evaluate it and we'd find out, okay, yeah, this works. And that's the tough part is people sometimes can get tied to the ideas, I think, because they're invested in it emotionally.
Right.
And I try to remind people, look, you cannot afford to be invested emotionally into anything.
Yeah.
This is a very humble art form. And so, you know, you can be humbled by the, you know, I mean, you know, you look at some of our guys that I knew were just amazing operators. These guys were just hardcore pipe hitters, and they were killed by somebody who lives in a cave.
Right.
You know, so you can't, you have to maintain that humility, and you have to constantly be trying to improve yourself. If you get comfortable, danger's lurking for you around the corner.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and one of my greatest fears is that after the amount of time that I've put into this and the dedication that I've put into this is that some tweaker somewhere with a Jennings 25 caliber will shoot me deader than dead, and that'll just be embarrassing. And it's like you said, you know, you gotta take it serious and you gotta stay humble about it because anything can happen, I guess, pretty much.
Absolutely.
So, out of curiosity, this will be a nice segue into next week's show. I've run into this thing where a lot of members of the community will be talking about certain things and using the same words, but they're not actually talking about the same thing, or at least their definition. Despite popular belief, there is no handbook that we all get to reference. It's like the Tactical Timmy Guide to Firearms Definitions 2015 or anything like that.
Right.
Out of curiosity, what's point shooting mean to you?
I would say it would be any type of shooting where you're foregoing the use of your sights.
Okay. So if and okay, I will buy that for a second. Does that mean that you don't have any visual confirmation on the gun at all, or you just don't have a hard front sight focus?
So you're getting into a couple of different things.
I know.
So here's like for us, when we do there are two types of shooting styles that we will use where you would theoretically be point shooting. We don't call it that. But there's what we call off-angle shots,
right?
And then there is close contact shots,
right?
So or near contact shots.
Retention.
So any of those, but it's not retention. That's the thing. People think they're shooting from retention, but off-angle shots means that you have no physical index with your body other than the hand on the gun.
Okay.
So the gun is not directly in front of you. I mean, off-angle could mean that you could be. You know, when we do the training classes, when we're doing the close quarters combatives, it's very and when we do it live fire, when we actually have guys doing it live fire, it's very disconcerting to people because it's weird. The gun is discharging in different angles. It's going different directions. I mean, I've had people that literally had developed such an aversion to it. You know, that it's difficult. But so those are examples of, you know, technically point shooting because we're not referencing our sights. When you're talking about what I believe you're talking about is your target, you're basically the focus, the subject of your focus.
Yeah, the only reason I brought it up is because I've done, and I doubt you've seen them, which is probably better for you because they've really caused all sorts of fun, interesting people to come out of the woodworks. It's, you know, I've got an eye issue, so like my ability to focus hard on a front sight is almost non-existent.
Sure.
So I do, I guess, depending on who you ask, I'm sure Rob Pincus would call it threat focus shooting.
Whatever.
Well, hey, Rob's a friend of mine too. You know, I get along with everybody. But, you know, somebody told me I was point shooting. It's like, well, no, I'm not. I'm aware of my sights. I'm just not focused on them. So what I did is I ran an experiment to see what happens when I do what I normally do, which is, you know, it's my version of sighted fire. I tried it without sights on the gun, and my performance was pretty similar. Not quite as accurate, but close. And then I tried it to where I could not maintain visual contact of the gun at all. Anyway, it brought up some interesting things. We're going to have to hold it till next show, so if you want to hear about how that argument went, listen next week with Jeff. We'll continue this. Make sure you check out our website, BallisticRadio.com, like our Facebook page at Facebook.com/BallisticRadio. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll be back next week with more with Jeff Gonzalez and Trident Concepts.